In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh yeah, time for our Monday meeting of the minds as Alan Adams joins us in studio. Hello there, Al.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We were just chatting about your weekend. You got down to the big city of Portland, had a little time out on the town.
Yep, some friends of ours came up from Massachusetts, and they had gotten a reservation at the restaurant 12 in Portland, and so they asked us if we would like to join them. We were looking, you know, with the show in the rearview mirror, we were looking to sort of maybe do a little something anyway. And so when that opportunity presented itself, we were pretty excited about it. And we got the chance to, on the way down, we got to see our niece in her youth softball game, which was, that's always fun. Had a lovely dinner. And then, and honestly, Rich, chased the night in a way that I've not in some time. But here's the thing. When your dinner reservation is at old people o'clock, you know, it's like you can go hard because you're spreading it out over like 8 hours.
Right, right.
Yeah. Our reservation was at 5. And so like we spent a couple hours at the restaurant, and it's just like we basically just drank and then eventually ate our way back to our hotel from the restaurant. It was great. It was a lovely time, great time with some great friends, and came back on the earlier side yesterday, and just had a nice sort of unplugging kind of weekend.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Well, it's good to do that once in a while.
Well, it's like I was telling Sheridan, like, you know what the indicator for me was that it was time well spent. The television in our hotel room was never turned on.
Oh, that's good. That's a good sign, right?
Do you know
there.
What I mean? Yeah. Like it's yeah. And again, I say this as someone who very clearly enjoys television, but it just never. Like we weren't there that long, and when we were there, we were just in, you know, either sleeping or enjoying one another's company. So it was nice.
Excellent, excellent. Sometime in the last week, did you see any films?
I did. I saw a couple, actually. I saw one. I saw one streaming option, and I saw the big release in theaters this weekend, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. But yes, I saw that, and I saw a real piece of something on Netflix called Mother of the Bride.
Oh my. Well, I always like to save the really bad ones for the end. So let's talk, you damn dirty monkeys, first.
Oh man, it's so for those keeping score, this is the fourth film in the current sort of series, and the 10th Planet of the Apes film overall. If you count the, you know, from the Heston original up through the ill-conceived Marky Mark. People forget about that one. Yeah, but you know, that is a thing that happened, everybody. That is a thing that happened. I believe it was Marky Mark, and I believe Tim Roth was the evil, was the main evil monkey. Mm-hmm. It was a whole thing. But these subsequent films, which, you know, up until this one was a trilogy, you know, Matt Reeves was sort of the guy who spearheaded it, and honestly, they're really pretty good. Like they're nice. You know, as far as franchise filmmaking goes, they're pretty sophisticated. You know, they're thoughtful. Again, for a given value of thoughtful, when the budget for your movie is nine figures plus, like you can't be too thoughtful. You know, unless you're Christopher Nolan, and so this is sort of the latest installment, and they had brought the original trilogy to a pretty good close. So I was curious as to how this was going to be handled. So this latest one, it's directed by Wes Ball, who's new to the franchise, and written by Josh Friedman. So this is a sequel to the third film of the series. And but I wondered how they were going to handle it, and how they handled it was basically doing a time jump, and so we leaped forward and had an opportunity to sort of drop into a world where, you know, there have been the apes have been in charge for much longer, so you know, that we meet all these apes. They've sort of formed various clans. The one that we're spending time with involves Noah, who's a chimpanzee, his clan, they're falconers.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, because, like, nothing says you know, apes like birds. But you know, it's one of those things where, okay, like, you know, we're sort of rebuilding, and we're finding our skills where we can. But there's a whole thing where they, like, it's very ceremonial, where they have to go out and find the egg, that they're going to then raise to be the falcon that they, that they command and all that stuff. It's very cool. But as we soon discover, you know, the peaceful ways of Noah's tribe, not necessarily the way that all the other apes handle things. We've got a pretty warlike bunch raiding various settlements for reasons that will eventually become clear. And we also find out that, turns out, humans, we've basically swapped places. Humans are, they can no longer speak. They are of... much more limited intellectual capabilities.
Well, we could see that coming.
Well, no comment. But as we soon discover, that is not true of all humans. Which is when we meet a human scavenger who's been who's following these apes around as they try to figure out who's behind these raids and what's happening. And as we quickly discover, these apes have learned some lessons from humans, not the good ones, they've learned some lessons, and so establishing empire, dominion, kingdoms, etc. We've got an ape named Proximus who's got some pretty big ideas, and he is gleaning these ideas thanks to a human who is helping him, played by, dude's got bills to pay, bail money to post, William H. Macy, hard at work, in this one. And so we get to see these various sorts of, spheres sort of intersect. And we find out that, our king Proximus is, he seeks something left behind by the humans, and he believes that this what he will find will help him again establish a real empire of apes. You know, I'll be honest with you, like, this movie it's not quite up to the level of the previous films, and that's okay. Like, you weren't like those movies are really quite excellent, and you don't have the. And I don't mean to imply that the mocap acting in this film is bad per se, but, like, you know, like the original movies, you had Andy Serkis doing his thing, and there's nobody better. And so, like, there is a noticeable drop in terms of that aspect of it. But it looks great. Like, I'm always down to see nature reclaiming the urban landscape. And so you get to see, like, crumbling buildings covered in vines and stuff like that. It's very cool. It's very cool. It looks great. Some pretty solid action sequences. The CGI work is excellent. Like, there's very little uncanny valley-ness happening, which, especially when you're dealing with non-human characters, but giving them human characteristics, like, it's tough. Mm. And they walk that line pretty well. The film ends in a way that is obviously there's obviously going to be more to this film, to this story, and as we learn that there's still room, you know, the ape on ape violence is all well and good, but there's still people out there, and we're way better at it than these apes are ever going to be, and I get the sense that in the second movie or the next movie. We might find out a little bit about that and how that's going to go. I went yesterday afternoon by myself, hung out, had some popcorn, and just had a good time at the movies, you know, and sometimes that's all I want.
Yeah.
And these movies are really good for that, in that they are well-made examples of it. Like, it's not like, you don't feel like you're wasting your time and you're not bored and you're not checking your watch, but you're also not, you know, there are some thoughtful ideas being expressed, but you don't have to sit there and feel like you're doing homework. It's like,
right.
You know, at the end of the day, it's talking monkeys fighting each other, you know, and like, you know, wielding torches and climbing things and generally doing stuff. And there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, and it had a huge weekend.
Yeah, big. And again, anything that gets people back into the movie theaters, like, I'm all for it. And it looks like, I think this month is sort of the tipping point. I think we're going to see a lot of big weekends over the course of the next few weeks, starting this coming weekend with Furiosa, the Fury Road prequel.
Right.
That movie is going to do gangbusters box office. And if what I've seen and heard so far is any indication, deservedly so. I'm so excited to see that movie.
And I've seen people dissing the box office numbers for The Fall Guy that you loved, but geez, I think it's 2 weeks in, it's close to $100 million in revenue.
It's doing fine. I think it cost a lot to make. And so I think that's something that people are sort of harping on a little bit, but you know what? Of course it cost a lot to make because, like, you actually broke stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you actually set dudes on fire. I know we talked about it last week, but I can't stress it enough. If you have any interest in any of those aspects of the filmmaking business, you should see this movie because everyone involved is clearly so enamored of stunt work, and the stunt work in the film is excellent. And again, we're going to see a lot more of that this weekend because George Miller is notorious for being more than willing to set a lot of money on fire rather than put stuff together in a computer. So good on him.
All right, let's find out how happy you were that you didn't have to leave the house to see Mother of the Bride.
Oh, man. Let me tell you. Okay, so I stumbled on this one by accident. Like, I was just sort of, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to, like, it was, you know, it was Thursday. I'm like, I knew I had a busy weekend ahead of me. So I'm like, oh, maybe I can get a new one in before all this happens. And I'm like, I see Brooke Shields is headlining a Netflix movie called Mother of the Bride. And I'm like, all right, let's see, I guess. I don't know. I can't in good conscience say I regret the decision.
Okay.
Only because it was so weirdly bad that I was kind of engaged, you know, certainly not in the way I was supposed to be, but definitely engaged, mostly because, like, you got the sense that the filmmakers, like, I don't know, read a book about people, or something, or maybe, like, you know, caught, like, you know, an episode and a half of, like, Moonlighting or something. It's just one of those things where it's like, it felt like no one really had a sense of how people talk or how the world works.
Wow.
So what you get is this remarkable mess of a movie that's only 90 minutes long, but I can't stress this enough. You will feel every single one of those minutes. So we've got a young lady named Emma Winslow, and played by Miranda Cosgrove of Nickelodeon fame. Yeah. Perfectly talented young actor. She's living abroad in London. She is an Instagram influencer because of course she is.
Right.
Her boyfriend, played by Sean Teal, proposes marriage, and it's like a beautiful thing, and it's a whole moment, and she's very excited, and then it's like, oh my god, how am I going to tell your mother? How am I going to tell my mother? And then we find out, oh, like, she hasn't told her mother that there's even a boyfriend, and so, but she has to you know, tell her mom quickly because the company that she works for, Discovery Resorts, said, hey, if we can put your wedding if we can live stream your wedding and like, and you know, get sponsors and stuff, we'll pay for it in, you know, in Tibet. No, sorry, Taiwan, Thailand. It doesn't matter. So it's like, oh, okay, well, apparently that is that a thing that happens? No, but in this world it does. But anyway, she has to go home and tell her mom. Her mom, the talented Dr. Lana Winslow, played by Brooke Shields, one of the world's foremost geneticists.
Oh, well, you can see that, of course.
Because, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
And
you can see that coming in Blue Lagoon.
Yep. And we're gonna take a pause right here and make it clear that her being a geneticist has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, it's just a thing that they put out there for, I don't know. It's like, see, she's smart, you know, and she's a smart person. And so, of course, she's disappointed in her Instagram influencer daughter or whatever. So anyway, she goes, you know, Lana's best friend comes along as well, because that's the kid's Aunt Janice, played by Rachel Harris, who's quite lovely.
I like,
here.
I like Rachel Harris.
I mean, it's the cast isn't bad. Like, there are actually some pretty notable names. But again, we get to the resort, and the families come together for the first time, and we see Aunt Janice. We meet some other buddies from college, including a gay couple, one of whom is played by Michael McDonald.
Not the
Doobie Brother, the actor.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Oh, that would have been killer. and then the boyfriend's dad shows up, it's Benjamin Bratt. Always nice to see Benjamin Bratt.
Sure, yeah.
Who I'm guessing lost a bet to be in this movie. But he shows up, and wouldn't you know it, Rich, the dad and the mom, well, they dated in college.
Of course.
And he ghosted her, and they never spoke to, like, 20 years later. They had not seen each other after the tumult of their original their original relationship. As you might imagine, that presents some complications as far as we go forward. The esteemed Dr. Winslow is widowed, is a widow. Our guy Benjamin Bratt, his wife ran off to Australia, and so he's divorced. So they're available, but there's still a lot of animosity there.
Yeah.
Because, and why wouldn't there be?
Yeah.
But as we watch, they sort of work through their issues, and all the while we're watching our young lady be swept up into the sort of spawn con nature of the wedding, starting to question whether this is what she really wants.
Wow, a lot going on.
And I didn't even get to the other doctor.
Well,
who's basically on vacation at this resort, but also like running a free clinic in the village. It's unclear. It's unclear what he's doing there. Is he on vacation? Is he working at the clinic? Is he doing both? I don't know. He is, of course, played by Chad Michael Murray.
Wow.
And he starts spitting some game at the esteemed Dr. Winslow.
Oh.
And, that complicates things even more, because, it's not enough to have the long-term reconciliation. Let's throw a little love triangle in there,
sure.
too. And again, I need to emphasize, this movie is only 90 minutes long. And yet, they jam so much stuff into it. And not a lot of it makes sense. And the relationship dynamics don't really track. You can probably figure, like, it's a Netflix rom-com. So, I mean, we more or less know how it's going to end.
Hmm.
It ends that way.
Just the way we thought.
Yep. Just, there are no surprises. Look, I don't have high expectations when I step into a movie like this. Like, just make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I did have fun, but not in the way I was supposed to. The absolute lack of chemistry in this movie is staggering. Like, it's staggering. Like, it's just like, it's like none of these people, It's like they stepped onto set and like it's like, oh, Brooke, this is Ben. Ben, Brooke, and action.
Go.
it's like they didn't even know each other. And to have all of this happening, you know, all these supposedly intimate connections, long like lifelong friendships, and it's like, I don't buy any of this. Like, and I'm an easy mark, right, Rich. Right. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, I want to be engaged. Yes. I do not need a lot from you, but I need something. And I did not get that something from Mother of the Bride. It's one of those things where, like, I don't know, like, is it too late to ask for an annulment? Like, I don't understand how a movie this... I don't understand how a movie is assembled this poorly, I guess. Mm. Like, because, I mean, it's on location, despite the fact that it doesn't always look it. Like, you're in this beautiful, like, you're in this beautiful tropical resort, and you still manage to make it look like half your scenes are filmed in front of a green screen? Like, how do you even do that? Because it's like, because they're very much there. Like, it's very clear that they are on location, and yet there's still a weird flatness to the cinematography, and, well, a weird flatness to the performances, and just a general lack of, God, anything. It's just this big sort of empty, like 90-minute hole that I'm just never going to be able to fill.
So, would the headline for this maybe be "Why Carly"?
Oh man, for you older listeners. Yeah. So iCarly was, she's a good kid. She's talented.
Sure.
She'll be fine. It's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes you make bad choices.
There you go.
Or sometimes your agent makes bad choices for you.
There you go.
Either way, Mother of the Bride. Yikes.
Alan Adams sharing thoughts on films every Monday past the popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll see you next.